Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Let's go. A little bit after 9 o'clock here on Chicago Sports Radio 670. The Score. I'm Mark Rohde in for Joe O. Joe Ostrowski off today, tomorrow, and Wednesday. So I will be in for those 3 days. And then I'm going to be in for Lawrence Holmes noon to 2 on Thursday and Friday. Then doing weekend stuff Saturday and Sunday. So you're stuck with me 7 days a week, baby. I will be here with you, for you, and I am about you. 312-644-6767 is the number, the phone number. If you'd like to get in, now would be a terrific time if you'd like to. You can text me too, 312-644-6767. So it's the same number. We are bundled. Coming up in about 20 minutes from right now, 9:20, Dan Hayes from The Athletic will join us to talk about the Minnesota Twins so we can see what the White Sox are in store for when they play those 10 games against the Twins. And that will be one of the themes of this week while I'm filling in for various hosts, that I want to see what the teams in the American League Central and the National League Central are up to, just because it is supremely important that the Sox and Cubs play well against those teams, because that's your season. That's where you're playing your games this year within the divisions, because of the 60 games. 40 out of the 60 games will be played against your divisional teams, no matter who your team is. And then 20 outside of it will be your matching division in the opposite league. So American League, National League, Central play each other, West, East, so on and so forth. So I think it's really important, more so this year than it has been in past years, to really know what the hell is going on with the teams in your division. We talked a little bit in that last segment. We started to get into football, and I told you why there will be football this year, and that's because of the Tom Brady, Bill Belichick, Cam Newton headlines. Like, the NFL can't not let that play out. They just won't be able to help themselves, I don't believe. So I do think, like, when people ask me, Mark, do you think there will be football this year? Yes, I do. I don't see there being any preseason games. I think that whole thing will be deleted, and I think it would be silly not to have it deleted at this point. Like, it just, yeah, there is value in the preseason. There's no doubt about it. And specifically with the Chicago Bears, there is value in it because of the quarterback competition. Yeah. And look, there are players whose careers year to year depend on even what happens in the fourth quarter of that fourth preseason game. There are guys that are just holding on and show something enough to make it onto a roster, whether they end up being a practice squad guy or a last man on the special teams depth chart. So it's important. The preseason does have its value, but for the most part, it doesn't have much value in the last 10 years specifically, where new rules have gone in and player safety is at a premium, and protecting your big money men is at an utmost as well. It's really, though, not necessary to test that. Like, if you're going to have a 16-game season this year. If you're going to try to pull it off, there are going to be so many headaches involved with it and attempting to get through it that it just would be silly and worthless to have the preseason this year. Why chance it? And I imagine that, look, there's going to be some owners who probably wouldn't be happy with that, with the money loss that would exist. But there's just so, I mean, we're well beyond the point where we can really afford to cry about the money loss because it's omnipresent. It is everywhere in every facet of life. So, yeah, there. I'd be shocked if there's a preseason. What I was told was, you know, in talking to people in the NFL, people who would be in the know, was, you know, just because I'm curious about myself as a sideline reporter for the Chicago Bears covering games home and road, what exactly is going to happen this year? And I've basically just been told, proceed as if you're going to do everything that you normally do, but don't be surprised if you don't do everything that you normally do. So the first thing, and this is truly a time where I guess I should look at myself and everybody who is a fan of the NFL, who works in the NFL, whatever the case may be, it truly is a day-to-day thing. Right now, if this was a normal season sitting here, I'd be able to tell you exactly when the first padded practice for the Bears would be. I would know if there were two-a-days, if there was going to be NFL officials, what day the NFL officials would be meeting up with the Bears in training camp. What days they have off, you know, also I'd have a room assignment for Bourbon A, and there will be no Bourbon A this year, no matter what. We would know some very specific, we'd have a schedule for training camp, and right now no team. And I'm going to talk about it in Bears terms, but this is all dictated by the NFL. This is not on the Bears, so to speak. There is no schedule. Nothing has been emailed to me unless it's happened while I've been carrying on here in the last, 10 minutes or so. There is no exact schedule. We have circled the date. We think the date on which there will be training camp and players will be allowed to go to their respective camps is July 28th. But there is no absolute guarantee of even that. I'm thinking, I would say it's pretty sure that's going to happen. But the most interesting part about training camp is what the protocol will be for camp, what they will be allowed to do, what they won't be allowed to do. I can't see a scenario where they're going to allow, padded practices or contact or live, as they call it in training camp, when they go live, which means they actually play football during a practice, which is relatively rare as it is in this day and age. And it really does affect and we'll make it Bears-centric, because this is the first year in a long time where, of course, every coach and every GM for every team is going to say that, hey, there's competition all over the field. There really is. In the Bears' case, there's a ton of real competition on this roster, and it obviously starts with the quarterback position. And because of the fact that the quarterback position or the offseason has been compromised as it has been, it's going to be Mitchell Trubisky as the starting quarterback when the Bears open up the season in the second week of September in Detroit. It's going to be Trubisky because you just, like, as smart as Nick Foles is, and I do believe he's smart, as much of an idea as he has of the Bears offense, and he does have an idea of what the Bears offense is, he doesn't know enough of the specifics and the tendencies to just jump in a cold way, and that's what I'm afraid it would be if it was to be Nick Foles. And when I say knowing tendencies, I'm talking about knowing how Allen Robinson likes the ball, knowing what Anthony Miller likes to improvise sometimes, knowing what Tariq Cohen is capable of doing, knowing where a guy, a tight end, likes to hang out on the field, where J.P. Holtz will be wandering. And I only used his name because he had experience with Trubisky last year, and he was the leading tight end for the Bears. These are things that Mitchell Trubisky does know, and Nick Foles does not know, and it does mean something. So I just don't think you can throw Foles in, as heady as he is, as well as he knows this coaching staff, because there are so many degrees of, like, everybody has played for or coached Nick Foles at some point in time in the NFL. But he doesn't know these guys. He doesn't know this group of guys who will catch the football. So it's going to be Trubisky. And, you know, if things look anything like they did last year, then you will see Cole Foles come in off the bench and have to jump to the rescue and do what he does, and that's being a great closer on teams. So that might be the best case scenario for Foles' sake anyway, because that's what he does well. But I just don't think there's enough time to have a true quarterback competition between Trubisky and Foles. They're at least they're going to have to make the decision based on what they have seen in the past and what their gut tells them. And I just think that in this case, they've got to take a chance on it being Trubisky one more time. And obviously, I think this is what you want. This is what fans should want. This is what management wants. You should want, obviously, Trubisky to succeed, considering where they drafted this guy and considering what has been invested in him and considering the fact that he is the younger player whom you can still keep around for the next 2 years, playing around with tags and potential extensions and things like that. So you definitely want it to be Trubisky, and I think that Trubisky, again, is going to be given that opportunity to be the guy once again. Like I said, if it fails, he will quickly be brought out and Foles will be inserted into the game. But it's really too bad that we're not getting to see all, or that we won't get to see all of this play out. And there's going to be some of it. Like we're going to be in whatever facet or whatever realm we are allowed to report on what's happening, it's still going to be the number one story in training camp. I'm not saying that there's not going to be a quarterback competition and that there won't be, you know, reports on a daily basis coming out of my mouth and others. And the top story, of course, the top story is still going to be, all right, what did Trubisky do today? What did Foles do today? And it's going to play out like that. I just think that the coaches are going to have a premeditated, preconceived idea of who that quarterback is going to be. And to me, it's got to be Mitchell Trubisky going into this year. And then along the way, it shouldn't take Foles long to catch up, so he should be ready to go if need be. But the number one guy, I think in this case is got to be Trubisky. So
hey, Grody,
it's going to be interesting.
Sorry, yeah. I didn't mean to interrupt you there, man.
It's all good.
I the theory that me and Joe have been buying into in the last several months now on the Trubisky Foles thing is, I am. I don't know how much Joe is to this extent, but I'm pretty sold on the fact that I agree with you. Trubisky's going to be the week one starter, if anything, because of everything you just mentioned, but also because his numbers against the Lions are all pro worthy. Like last year in two games against the Lions, he had 124 quarterback rating. The year before that, he had 148. He's only thrown one interception to 9 touchdowns against the Lions in the last 2 years. He tears the Lions up. So I think he's going to start against the Lions, and then we'll have a real quarterback competition after that.
You know, it is definitely handy that you have Detroit, albeit on the road, to start the season. So, right, that I like where you guys are going with that, but I can see your Detroit Lions and raise you week two when the Bears are, it's not exactly a rough and tumble start to the season because they're home against the Giants in week two. So honestly, this puts Trubisky in a really nice position to, if nothing else, build up some real confidence through the first two games of the season. And you're absolutely right about what he has been able to do against Detroit. The Giants were 4-12 last year, and I'm not thinking that they have done enough with their team, the Giants, to really make that big step forward under Daniel Jones. And we might as well do this now that I've busted out the schedule. And then week three, they are at Atlanta, another team, a team which I actually think is going to be better, but that's another team that was under 500 last year, a 7-9 team last year with Matt Ryan still there, entering his 13th year in the NFL. That team is a team that always has a chance to be explosive offensively, obviously, with the weapons that they have. But that's three straight games against teams that were under 500. And then game four, yep, we're doing this, home against the Indianapolis Colts on October 4th, another noon game. That's a Colts team that was under 500 last year. They were 7-9, although they did draft Jacob Eason to be their third-string quarterback. How about that? Phillip Rivers, Jacoby Brissett, Jacob Eason. Interesting quarterback room for the Colts.
Grody, is after 4 weeks, the Bears are going to be 4-0. We can mark that down, right?
I just told you we're doing this, man. Yeah, 4-0. So with Trubisky as the quarterback, we're doing this. Wait a minute. I've hit upon a stumbling point, studs. Week five, they host the mighty Tampa Bay Buccaneers on Thursday night. Tom Brady and Bob Gronkowski come to town. Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. Although they were 7-9 last year, just like those other two teams that I just mentioned.
Yeah, I'm not buying into that Bucs team. So
you're not?
Bring it on. Bring it on.
For real, real?
No, yeah. I mean, look, they got two really good receivers. I'll admit that to you. But Gronk hasn't played football in 2 years. Tom Brady's 42. I'm just not buying it. I think they're going to be fine, but I don't think they're going to be as good as some people think they are.
Yeah, because it's just like everybody sort of snapped their fingers and said, yep, since they got Tom Brady, they are definitely going to the playoffs. So I can't decide if I'm rooting for them or not. I don't know where, because I have actually always liked the Tom Brady thing. I've always rooted for him. I don't know if I am anymore. All right, we'll make it 5-0 right there. I wish we could go through the entire schedule, but we're just not going to have time to do that. By the way, really quick, game six at Carolina. Carolina, what were they last year? 5-11, although they do have Teddy Bridgewater. So maybe if we have time at the end of the show, maybe we'll finish going through the Bears schedule. We're doing this. We did it. We got to take a fast break, because when we come back, we are going to Bears. Be talking about the Minnesota Twins. Yes, Bears, with Dan Hayes of The Athletic. So listen up, White Sox fans. We'll tell you what you'll be dealing with one of the top teams in the division this year, the team against which the White Sox actually opened the year on July 24th on a Friday night at Guaranteed Rate Field. So Hayes is next. I'm Mark Grody. This is Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
The Twin.
Welcome back in on Chicago Sports Radio 670. The Score. I'm Mark Grody, in for Joe Ostrowski. I will be here until 10 o'clock tonight at midnight, overnight, Score overnight. Les Grobstein featuring me, yours truly, Mark Grody, as I will be Grobber's guest at midnight. I talked to the Grobber today, and he asked me to come on his show, and I said, of course I'm going to come on your show. We are going to, throughout the week, be previewing the teams in the National League Central and the American League Central, the primary opponents for both the Cubs and Sox, since all teams in the divisions will play. That's where 40 of the 60 games will exist. The Minnesota Twins won 101 games last season. They hit a record 307 homers last year. They were for real last year, whether you wanted them to be or not. And joining us now to talk about the powerful Twins is Dan Hayes of The Athletic. Dan, all of that, and they added Josh Donaldson. But I understand that there's a little bit of news with the Twins right now. There is, at least today, a key injury. Can you tell us about that, man?
Yeah, Byron Buxton went down today during their intra-squad, kind of took a weird step. He might have got his cleat hooked in the ground, but the wind was shifting the ball around, and you could see he took an awkward step. And as of right now, he is getting a whole bunch of imaging done, and they are unsure of what he is out with, but he is definitely down. They were encouraged from the initial go-through, I guess, when they checked on him initially. Nothing major like was there as far as a broken bone, as far as anything that was outward that they could see. But they obviously are going through all the testing, and they are concerned. But at this point, they've put themselves as cautiously optimistic. You never know, and we've seen even cautiously optimistic result in 2 weeks on the injured list, that kind of thing, and 2 weeks in a 60 game season can be so critical. I mean, you're talking about close a little bit more than one fifth of the schedule, and that would be a huge loss for them to miss Byron Buxton as much as he means to them. Last year when he was in the lineup, he was in the open or the starting lineup, they were 53-25 when he was in the lineup. They were still, when he didn't play, 48-37. Obviously they were still above 500 and a good team, but clearly when you're a team that's playing 750 ball with him in the lineup, that tells you what he means to that club. Or maybe it's like 690, 680, somewhere in there. But they're ridiculously better with him in the lineup. And so they're definitely a little concerned at this point with him out of the lineup. We'll find out more either late tonight or early tomorrow. But definitely a huge development on their front.
He's an interesting guy to start with, too, in terms of talking about the Twins, and you outlined exactly how important he was to them. I mean, this is a guy who, when he came up in 2012, you know, second overall pick, and they were talking about this guy, like, going to be one of the great MLB players. Like, there could not have been more pressure put on Buxton as a major league player, right? I mean, and I think he felt some of that pressure. It's good to hear and to have seen that he's starting to live up to, I don't know, Dan, I don't know that he's lived up to the hype that was placed on him. And I get it, he's not the first prospect to have hype put on, but man, it was at a 10 with that guy. It's good to see that he is settling in and becoming such a huge, important part there in Minnesota.
Yeah, there's no question. I mean, I think I was still covering the Padres when he got drafted, and it was immediate, like, this guy's going to be the next big thing. I mean, and you see it when he's healthy. He's had a lot of trouble staying on the field the last couple of years, and it's just random freak injuries, and they do start to add up, and it sucks in the way that you know how much effort he puts into things. He is a consummate pro. Like, his teammates love him. The energy he brings, he's just a guy who loves to play, loves to go all out, and he's been hamstrung with injuries the last couple of years. But last year, you know, he finally figured out how to get back to his game. He really was showing all the signs of maturity, and he learned a lot about his swing during a really rough 2018 season in which they just didn't bring him back in September. Even though he was healthy, they basically did what they do with all the prospects – start of their career and keep them on the sideline to get an extra year of service time out of them. It was a really rough offseason for him, and he learned how to hit. You look at what he did last year, he had a 514 slug, and he has such a great speed power combo that very few players in baseball have. And yeah. I mean, I think he had 295 plate appearances last year. He had 44 extra base hits, you know, 30 doubles in 87 games. So clearly he is dynamic compared to a lot of players in the league. And it is good to see him get that and maybe get a little bit of the pressure off of him. But it's troubling, you know, just for him. You want to see him get out there more consistently. And he just hasn't been able to avoid the injury bug lately.
Yeah, and there is, you know, there is obviously comfort being a part of that lineup, as I mentioned in the open, with the Twins having hit a record 307 home runs last season. And then, as I also mentioned, that they make the addition of Josh Donaldson, obviously proportionate to a 60-game season and a team that won 101 games last year. Did the Twins get better? Are they a better team heading into this year than they were last season?
Well, let's throw the ball out, just because we don't know what the ball is going to be. But there are some predictions going around that they think they could have hit more home runs than they did last year if they have 162 games. Now, if the ball is the same ball, I think there's a chance they could challenge it. I don't think it's going to be the same ball. I don't think it's going to jump out of the park quite the way it did last year. But even with some reductions, they thought, you know, maybe their 70th percentile outcome was hitting 250 to 270 home runs in a full season. For a team that's never really, you know, this is the Twins. This is the scrappy bunch, Ron Gardenhire's fighting, you know,
scrappers.
Like, there you go, fighting for our thing. all those years. And to see them be this power team last year was just eye-opening. I mean, I think everybody in the division took notice. And, you know, then you double down on power and you go get Josh Donaldson. That was a huge move staying that they wanted to win now. You know, and they added Rich Hill, which was sort of under the radar, but you look at what he has done when he's healthy over the years, and 2.91 ERA in 87 starts since 2015, and has pitched really well in the postseason for the Dodgers too. So they clearly are looking at going for it right now. They think that they are a very good team. They need to get over that Yankees hump. I mean, this is a team that has not won a playoff series since 2002. So there's a lot of internal pressure from the from ownership. There's a lot of fan pressure, and you know, it's clearly that they are thinking now is the time to get over that hump. And they have a lot of depth. So even if Buxton is out for a while, you know, they should be able to manage it, but you never want to go into the season with potentially your best player on the sideline.
No doubt. You mentioned Rich Hill, the starter, who I think is finally 40. He might be 40. Like, I feel like Rich Hill, he's been around for so long, and he's only 40. But he is there. Homer Bailey at the end of the rotation. I see Kenta Maeda in there as well. I've always liked Jake Odorizzi. But how good is Jose Berríos, or what's his ceiling? Have we even seen it yet?
No, I don't think we have. I think there's more to go. And he's a guy that is always learning, trying to learn, and he's trying to add a 12-6 curveball this year, which, you know, I think he's trying to cover as many quadrants as possible. And I know that covering Don Cooper quadrants, getting all the quadrant coverage is a huge thing.
Yes.
But I think that there's definitely some room for growth, and he's a smart kid, and he's just got great stuff. And you see it at times where he can be an ace. What he's always kind of struggled to do is limit the damage and in his bad runs, and he'll have four or five bad starts in a row, and he'll knock his ERA up to 3.8 instead of being down in the 3.2s, something like that. He definitely has that potential to be a 2.8 ERA kind of guy. You know, we're talking about a two-time All-Star already. I don't see that stopping and keep going. And the Twins need him to take that step forward because Jake Odorizzi is a free agent. Rich Hill is a free agent. Homer Bailey's a free agent. The only guys they have back as of next year, Michael Pineda and Kenta Maeda, and they have some rookies coming that they like, but it would definitely help to have Berríos kind of take that next step forward.
That's Dan Hayes. He is of The Athletic talking about the Minnesota Twins. So, yeah, I mean, the Twins clearly in go-for-it mode. Some of the thumpers on the Twins last year, guys who were crushing the baseball and who will, I mean, presumably Donaldson will, but, you know, Miguel Sano and Jorge Polanco and Eddie Rosario and the ageless Nelson Cruz. Is it being assumed or that all these guys will stay? And I know you said that it has to do with the baseball, but is there any reason to think that those guys, was anything flukish about what happened with the actual home run hitting last year except for the baseball?
Well, we'll see on Cruz because he just turned 40 on July 1. So But it wouldn't shock me to see him have another good performance. I mean, he takes care of himself so well. I mean, the guy has masseuses and has a nap room that he has created with every team he's gone to. He can sleep in the middle of a clubhouse with 20 guys around being loud. He has no problem just hitting the couch for 15, 20 minutes, taking a power nap and getting ready. So his routine is fantastic. But obviously you're turning 40. That's a big barrier there. Not a lot of guys have great histories after age 40. The rest, however, you're all in your physical prime. You know, Miguel Sano right now is sidelined because of coronavirus. He's been asymptomatic since he tested positive. He just has not cleared the protocol. But you look at him, he's young. You look at Polanco, physical prime. Max Kepler, physical prime. You know, Buxton is just entering his physical prime. There's no reason to believe that those guys shouldn't go back up. Miguel Sano had a monster season. He didn't get back in the lineup last year until May 18th or May 21st, maybe, and had a huge year, a career year. And I think they are big believers in him. They gave him a contract extension over the off season. So in that way, I think that they are safe when it comes to hitting home runs, especially you add Donaldson in. You know, he's 34, but he's going to a friendly pitcher or a friendly division for home runs, you know, from one of the better pitching divisions in baseball in the NL East. And so I think they suspect he can continue his output the way he has been. It's a very thorough lineup top to bottom for sure. And, you know, I really like what the White Sox did with their offseason. They did a lot of things similar to what the Twins did last year. Just bring in some veteran guys to fill things out. I can see a lot of high scoring, ugly drag out 4-hour games between the White Sox and Twins this year, just because there's no easy outs in either lineup.
Yeah, no, that's a great point, man. I mean, the offense against offense on those two teams, there's a lot of firepower, and the Sox host the Twins starting on the 24th, hopefully a week from this Friday at Guaranteed Rate Field. So those two teams. So what? Let's take the lens out. While you mentioned the White Sox, you know, I look at it as the Twins would be the favorite in this division. But how do you kind of handicap the rest of this division? Do you look at the White Sox as the number one competitor to the Twins, assuming you think the Twins are the top dogs in this division?
Well, the Indians always have the pitching. And, I you know, you never can discount them. Plus, they know how to get done. They've been doing it for, you know, 5 years now. And they have by far the best shortstop. And I love Tim Anderson, but come on, Francisco Lindor is probably one of the top 3 to 5 players in the game. Yeah. You look at Jose Ramirez. I mean, it's a good team. They don't have a ton of offense, but they definitely have the pitching and the bullpen. And so they're going to make it difficult. I see it something where one of these two or two of these three teams should make the playoffs, in my opinion. I just think that whoever it is will get a wild card, because the fact of the matter is, the AL Central teams have the best schedules in baseball, and they have the least amount of travel, which is huge too. So they're not going to have to beat up on, you know, they don't have all these teams. The AL East and the NL East, that's tough sledding right there for a bunch of teams, because there's 3 or 4 good teams in the NL East and there's 3 or 4 good teams in the AL East. So that's really difficult. You have obviously the Pirates, you have the Indians, or you have the Royals and the Tigers to fill out your schedule in the Central. So I think that it wouldn't be shocking at all if we saw maybe the White Sox could grab the wild card. They certainly have the offense to do it, and clearly have some good veteran pitching. I like the back end of that bullpen. If they get some leads, they're going to win their games. And so that should be a lot of fun just to see these three teams battle it out. But I do think the Royals and Indians are probably a little better, or the Royals and Tigers are going to be better than they were last year. Instead of being complete pushovers, they're just going to be pushovers this year. But yeah, it's going to be a nice little 60-game sprint to see what the White Sox, Indians, and Twins can do, and it should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, you mentioned the pen for the White Sox and guys like Aaron Bummer and Colum A and even Steve Cishek this year. I didn't even ask you about the Twins bullpen. How does that look? Are they pretty competent, pretty tight this year?
Yeah, I think they showed a lot. Last year, they really went through a rough stretch in the second half early on and got rid of some key guys and decided to add Sergio Romo and Sam Dyson. Sam Dyson never really pitched for them. He got hurt early on. But Romo solidified the group. And Taylor Rogers is legit. He could be an all-star, should have been one last year. He's their closer, but Trevor May and Tyler Duffy really stepped up last year, and Tyler Duffy went from a sinker pitcher to throwing his four-seam at the top of the zone and paired that with a nasty off-speed pitch to just become a dominant reliever. And you throw those three guys together, bring back Sergio Romo, you've got Tyler Clippard to throw in the mix as your fifth or sixth best reliever, and you got a couple other really good pitchers. You look at Cody Stashek, he's sort of an under-the-radar guy, mostly slider, and he struck out 25 and walked one last year in sort of a limited role, and Zach Littell throws pretty hard. So they're a deep group, maybe not household names, and that's understandable, but I think they count as that group as a really good group. I still think it could be a little bit better. One more elite arm would put them over the top, but you know, for where they are right now on opening day, they have to feel pretty good.
And just the one positive test then for COVID with the Twins that you guys know of at this point that's been made public?
No, they've okay. So on the off the major league roster, two guys between Sano and Williams Astudillo, they've had three minor leaguers. Two tested positive before they got to camp. That was Edouard Colina and Nick Gordon, their first rounder from 2014. They just found out that Wilfredo Tovar, who's a minor leaguer who was in camp with them to fill out the 60-man and is sort of a backup infielder, he tested the other day. He's been at St. Paul, so he hasn't been working out with them. But they do have five of their 59 that have had positive tests. So, I mean, the Twins are handling it very well as far as most of those guys were pre-intake issues. So their process is thorough, but, I mean, even with the thorough process, it shows you just how tricky this whole situation is to navigate.
You think we'll make it through the season? You think
60 games? Oh, man, I hope so. I really hope so. I don't know. I mean, fingers crossed. It's just nice to have the idea of baseball back, but there's so many hurdles. It's going to be very interesting.
Yeah, no doubt about it. There is no real answer to that question. Dan, thanks for taking the time. I'm sure we'll talk to you throughout the year.
All right, hey, thanks for having me on.
You got it, man. That is Dan Hayes of The Athletic talking about the Minnesota Twins, and we'll keep this going throughout the week. You know, we talked about the Cincinnati Reds with Mark Sheldon from MLB.com at 7, and then we just got off the phone with Dan Hayes talking about the Twins. Tomorrow, we'll try to see what's up with the St. Louis Cardinals and the Cleveland Indians and so on and so forth. I don't know if we're going to get into the Royals and the Tigers and the Pirates and that, you know, as Dan Hayes described, that, you know, they're still, what did he say? They're not pushovers, but they're still bad. Something like that. I don't know that those teams are necessarily interested in winning, but we'll try to give you as much intel as possible about the teams in the Central Divisions, American and National League, because of all the games that we've played, 40 out of the 60. But yeah, man, the Twins, I guess I hadn't really looked at the contract status of basically their entire starting staff, except for Jose Berríos, who obviously is the best in that rotation. But, you know, Odorizzi's always been a good pitcher, and he is, you know, his contract comes up. Same with Maeda. And, well, Rich Hill's contract comes up every year, no matter who he's with. And then old Homer Bailey. Remember Homer Bailey, how great he was once upon a time with the Cincinnati Reds? He's one of those guys, like, kind of just I'm glad he's still hanging in there, but just a sad, bad injuries career that Homer Bailey has had after, what, one or two no-hitters in his career? It's sort of a sad story for him. But I remember last year with the Twins, people kept wondering, is this team for real, up until the day they won their 101st game of the season and they hit their 307th home run, which was a record. Interestingly enough, the New York Yankees were second in that capacity and they hit 306. The ball was juiced last year and nobody really cared. But yeah, it's I think that's a good point too that Dan brought up, and we'll all be monitoring that, and we'll probably know within the first week of the season if we are dealing with the juiced baseball this year. I think it's probably unnecessary from baseball standpoint, because you don't want there's going to be so many odd things happening this year. You don't need to add another oddity. Just make it even, make the baseball normal. Let it be more about pitching this year, just because it's a shorter season and it will naturally be more about pitching this season. But that was good. That was fun getting a little taste of what's going on with the Minnesota Twins. I'm Mark Grody. In for Joe Ostrowski, 312-644-6767 to text or to call if you would like. When we return, we started it. We're six games through the Bears schedule. Damn it, we're going to finish it next on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Go Bears!
You're gosh darn right, Go Bears. Mark Rohde on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score, filling in for Joe Ostrowski. Yeah, we started doing the thing, Adam and I. The thing, because we were talking seriously, I was, about the Bears and their quarterback competition, and I do believe it will be Mitchell Trubisky starting in Detroit. And then Adam had said that he and Joe O have the theory of Trubisky, at least in the first game, because it's at Detroit on September 13th, and Trubisky typically plays very well against the Detroit Lions. But then I said, hold on a second, their next game is against the Giants. That's not a good team. They were 4-12 last year, and maybe they're two games better this year. And then hold on, Atlanta wasn't great last year. They were 7-9, although they did add some pretty good player or pretty good cornerback in AJ Terrell, and obviously Matt Ryan is still there. But they were 7-9. So same with the Colts, who the Bears play in Week 4. They were 7-9. Adam does not believe in Tampa Bay, so we do believe that that's 5-0 up to that point. And then, look, Carolina kind of sucks too. They were 5-11, so 6-0 for the Bears, even though they have Teddy Bridgewater. And that brings us, studs, to we're doing it. October 26th, Game 7, Monday Night Football at the Rams. Now, the Rams were a 9-7 team last year. The Bears did lose to the Rams 17-7. Remember that game, the game where they kind of snuck Trubisky out at the very end and the phantom warm-up for Chase Daniel? So I don't know, studs. I'm thinking that that's a win for the Bears just for the revenge factor, right?
Yeah, I mean, they should have beat them last year. You know, if they had just had a competent, I mean, it's one of how many games last year, if they just had a competent offense, they would have won. So I think that they're going to win that game, honestly. And, I mean, you know, it's out in California, but they don't really, there's not going to be a home field advantage for any team this year. So I don't think even by October they'll have fans in the stands. I think they'd be crazy if they do. So, yeah, I mean, I think that they absolutely should win that game, actually.
Okay. All right, 7-0. So we're making the case for 16-0 here. Their next game after that would be November 1st, home against the New Orleans Saints. You know, last year, that was the game where the Bears had 7 carries for 17 yards. And, you know, the Saints were really good. But let's face it, Drew Brees, he's cooked. He's completely done. You're going to have Jameis Winston quarterbacking that team before you know it. So I'm looking at that as, you know, it's a revenge game again. There's no way Ryan Pace is going to let this team lose to his old team again. 8-0 right there.
8-0, book it.
Yep, 8-0. All right, next week, the following week, game 9 for the Bears at Tennessee. Laura, come on, man. That was the Derrick Henry thing and Ryan Tannehill. That was all a fluke. Mike Vrabel's going to have, you know, he's going to have the sophomore slump. So that's another easy victory for the Bears, even though that's a playoff team. That's 9-0.
Ryan Tannehill sucks.
Yeah, he sucks. He's bad. He's a bad, bad, bad quarterback.
Stop Derrick Henry, and they're going to win that game 10-7. Defensive battle.
All you got to do. Right. Akeem Hicks is right there in the middle. There's no way Henry's going anywhere. Week 10, home against Minnesota. That's Monday Night Football at Soldier Player. Please. Of course the Bears are going to win that game. It's Soldier Field without fans. And it's going to be something to behold. Even though they don't have Nick Williams this year, the Bears, who just played ferociously against the Minnesota Vikings last year. What are they going to do? They had studs. They had like 17 draft picks this year. The Twins. The Vikings have a lot to sort out.
Yeah, they do. And look, I don't believe in Kirk Cousins. I never have. And the Bears have showed multiple times against Kirk Cousins like how to blow him up. I mean, you look at the first game against Minnesota last year, Kirk Cousins wanted nothing to do with that game after the first quarter. It was over. And so, I mean, you put the pressure on him and he folds, and then the rest of the team will go with him.
Dude, they held Dalvin Cook to 35 yards at Soldier Field last year. Remember that?
Oh, that dude, that was I was actually just thinking about that game yesterday. Was it yesterday or the day before? Because after the night of that game, so that after that game happened, I actually went to a concert and I saw one of my favorite bands, this band called Bad Flower. And I was just thinking about how great of a mood I was in, because, like, oh, the Bears are 3-1. They're on their way to something. I'm seeing my favorite band tonight, or one of my favorite bands tonight. Like, this is a great day. And then, you know, the rest of the season happened.
Yeah. There's no such thing as a band called Bad Flower. Is there really?
Oh, yeah.
Bad Flower?
Oh, I've played some of their, I have one of their songs on here. I've played it before.
Oh, yeah? Okay. All right. Well, we'll explore some more Bad Flower tomorrow night.
I'll play it for
strong.
You.
Strong.
I'll play it for you.
You know I like it strong. So that, okay. All right. All right. A little bit of Bad Flower right there. All right. So that puts us, I know we're running out of time here. That puts us at 10-0 for the Bears season right there. Then they have the bye week. Then they're at Green Bay, 12-0, because let's face it, Aaron Rodgers is not going to have it anymore. Home against Detroit. We already talked about Detroit, 13-0. Home against Houston, noon, Bill O'Brien will have just destroyed that team by then, 14-0. December 20th, week 15, game 15, that is against or at Minnesota. We've already told you how much Minnesota sucks and how much Dalvin Cook sucks. So there's that. And then week 16, home against the Green Bay Packers. And you think the Bears are going to let the Packers beat them at Soldier Field after they ruined the Bears' 100th anniversary game to start this past season? I don't think so, studs. And to me, when I add that all up, man, that is a 16-0 season for the Chicago Bears. Did I do it justice?
Yes, absolutely. I can't see this season going any other way now. 16-0.
That's it. That's it. There you have it. You are absolutely welcome. I'm glad we managed to get our way through the entire Bears schedule. Do I think it'll go exactly like that? Probably not. On the serious side, we could look into some of the serious side of things and where I think the Bears might end up being in reality next year. And I don't think it's going to be bad. So we'll get into more Bears tomorrow night. We'll continue with our baseball theme with the central divisions for the White Sox and the Cubs. Thank yous tonight going out to Mark Sheldon of MLB.com, who covers the Reds. Also to Dan Hayes of The Athletic, who told us all about the Minnesota Twins. Thanks to you, Adam Studzinski, for putting the show together. Thanks to everybody for listening. I do appreciate it. Thanks for your text messages and your phone calls as well. Appreciate it all. We keep the convo going on Twitter. I'm at Mark Grody Sports, and I will be on with Grobber at midnight tonight for a segment. So if you want to hear that tomfoolery, please, please, by all means, join us. Have a great night. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.